and now coming to you nearly live from a catacombs deep within beneath Virginia City and Story County. It's the Storyteller Online Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Toll, recording today on Friday, the 2nd of June. Today I've got an interview with Sheriff Gerald Antonoro. We recorded the interview yesterday, and I was in the field. I actually went to his office to record the audio, and I had what could be described as technical difficulties. I had some equipment problems. I've got a mixer and a computer and software that I carry with me and can do mobile on-site recording. And for some reason, the device was picking up some background noise, and because the sheriff's schedule was such, we decided to go ahead and cut it and see if, in fact, we could get something that's salvageable. Sadly, there's a pretty serious background noise that is occurring inside the audio, the interview that we have. But we did talk about some interesting things, including body cameras, safety and coverage, and community-based policing again, as well as marijuana. So without any further ado, I'd like to share with you our interview with Sheriff Gerald Antonoro and the Story County Sheriff's Office. Here today with Sheriff Gerald Antonoro, and we'd like to give you another update on what's going on with the Story County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Sam. Good to see you again. Gosh, what's new? All kinds of things are new. The other night we had legislators up here in Story County at the Delta giving a little town hall on their presentations or on their works down there at the legislature. They went over quite a few things that the end result, at least from my perspective, is that not a whole lot's getting done down there at the legislature this year, and there's different reasons for that. Everybody can justify it the way that they want to, but one thing that has come out of it is body cameras for law enforcement officers. And recently, I think I shared this with you, Channel 2 News had come up and spoke with me just to get a perspective from rural county how this body camera bill is going to affect us. So I thought maybe it'd be an opportunity to go into a little bit more detail with you on that for your listeners that, you know, maybe folks who missed it on Channel 2 or else they were left with a few questions. As they did have the Washoe County Sheriff, Sheriff Allen, on there. He had a little bit different perspective, but I think he touched on some of the same points. But I think it's important for folks to realize just what this does.
So it's interesting. I spent 30 years in the Sacramento area, and the type of law enforcement and the folks that live down there are completely different from what we have up here in Story County. However, and so I've been on both sides of and seen both sides of the body cam argument, I guess, for lack of a better word, or issue. It seems to me that the idea of body cams serves both parties, a person who is potentially the victim of abuse in law enforcement, and for law enforcement officers themselves who, you know, are constantly being videoed by the public and having those videos show and portray a certain type of action, but without the context of the entire interaction with law enforcement and the individual. So I can see that from where I stand, body cams serve both, the public and law enforcement together.
Well, you're right. There is a benefit, and I'm not taking away from that benefit. There is a factor that protects the officer against wrongful allegations, so that is a good thing. And there's a certain amount of protections that come to the citizens, knowing that, you know, what is portrayed or what took place is going to be portrayed in a certain lens. But I think you actually hit on it. Without having the full context, we've all seen this in the news, you see these clips that they play, and that's by no means the whole story. And depending on how you filter that, how you frame that, and what clips you show, that can be to the detriment of a citizen. It can be to the detriment of an officer. So, you know, I'm not going to try and take away from them. I think that they're a tool properly, they can be a benefit. However, I try to balance this with the cost, and therein lies the crux of the problem, is that yes, there are places, there are bad cops in the world, there are bad people in the world, but this is just a bad piece of legislation, and I'll say why. We've had tools available to us for years that do as well or better of a job than the body cameras, and nobody mandated them, but we have some incidents that happened on a national level or caught national attention, and now all of a sudden we're stuck with body cameras. Nevada is the second state in the nation to mandate this, and we are right up front. But think back about the incidents that you've heard, all these heinous situations where you know, they say that a cop was going rogue and doing bad things, and so they want to protect the public with these body cameras. And from my perspective, from a enforcement or subsequent prosecution aspect, you know, how often those come into court in an evidentiary manner. And the loser in this whole equation is the taxpayers, because you know, we have not had the incidents to the same level or magnitude across that have been depicted in the news across the country. But yet now the citizens of the state of Nevada are going to be shelling out a lot of money. And, you know, you can justify that any manner of ways, you know, whether we're going to take it from existing taxes, whether we're going to impose the new tax, the surcharge that the legislature authorized to fund this endeavor and improve 911 systems. But in the end, it doesn't change the fact that Story County Sheriff's Office is going to spend about $80,000 of tax dollars to implement body cameras when we have a very low level of complaints against deputies, and an even lower instance of issues where a deputy may be going rogue or anything. I mean, we haven't had complaints of excessive force, or thank goodness we've not had much of anything in the way of any shootings, anything like that. But doesn't change the fact that now the legislature, in their wisdom, has said that Story County taxpayers will pay $80,000. And they didn't put that dollar amount on there, but that's what the system's going to cost us. And that's just the initial setup. Those costs don't ever go away, because then we have to replace cameras, we have to replace servers. One of the things I touched on with Channel 2 when they were contrasting rural agencies versus larger agencies, and my counterpart down in Washoe County even brought this up. He said he may have to hire some people, but you know, he's got some staffing in place for the administration of such a system. I don't. And to hire a person to administer that, even on a part-time basis, there's an additional ongoing cost. And like I said, not taken away from the good things that, in theory anyway, the body cameras bring about. But when you balance that with the money that the taxpayers are going to have to shell out, it still appears to be a knee-jerk reaction to some bad incidents that have happened in this country. And, you know, that I think our efforts and our monies would be better suited or better spent focusing on training our staff, not only to know what the law is and know what their jobs are, and to treat people as neighbors and work in their communities as if they're dealing with their neighbors rather than just, you know, an occupying force. You know, we're not in the West Bank, you know. I come down to your house on a call, whether you've got a dog that wandered up onto your porch, or whether you're in a fight with a neighbor, or you're in a fight with the missus or whatever. You know, there's certain things I need to remember. First and foremost is that you're human beings and that you're neighbors. You know, those It's a mindset, it's a perception, and that seems to have gone out the window all across our country. We're not dealing with our neighbors. It long been held and known, and I've dealt with this since back in the mid-80s when I first got into law enforcement. It's a them versus us mentality. And the sooner that officers understand that it's a we situation, it's us and the public. You know, we get our authority from the people. Doesn't mean that we don't take enforcement action against them. We need to take enforcement action when it's appropriate. But we still need to remember we're dealing with our friends, we're dealing with our neighbors, we're dealing with our communities, and we need to do that in an appropriate and professional manner. And that $80,000 could go a long ways towards better screening, better selection process, better training, and implementing that mindset across the country versus buying some piece of equipment and thinking that that's going to solve all our problems, because it's a far cry from solving the problems.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. Folks today just assume that technology is going to, you know, be the savior and protect them or to serve them in a manner that couldn't be done elsewhere. And I think that while the Supreme Court has suggested that law enforcement no longer has to protect and serve, the notion that you just shared with us, where, you know, again, back to the community-based policing effort and understanding that we're all human beings together, and it is your job to keep peace and to maintain decorum throughout the community, but we're all in the same community together. We all live here. We all, you know, go to the same restaurants and share the same community, and that sense of community is what binds us. So, it's funny you touched on the money. I was curious. You suggest it's going to cost about $80,000, and there, of course, are ongoing costs that are surrounding that. You know, you've got to download that video content onto a server. You've got to keep it for a prescribed period of time. I'm sure the law says that you're required to keep it for a certain amount of time, and you should probably keep it forever just because. But those are the unseen effects or ramifications of this kind of legislation. I look at it as a cost benefit. You know, what are the problems that we have in this community, and how do we best address them? If you look at spending $80,000, I look at the vehicles that you've got sitting parked that need repair work, and I think, goodness, $80,000 buys about 3.5 interceptors, and that's probably as good as any. Clearly training is something that you need to focus on, but if you're going to talk about an unfunded mandate, which is something that legislators just absolutely love to do because it makes them look good in the public eye, but it doesn't really, they have to pick the public's pocket in order to put those things are in place. They really put a burden on everyone. Up in the 911 tax that you pay on your phone bill, hey, nobody's going to notice it, but it still adds up at the end of the day and the end of the year. So, interesting perspective, and it'll be interesting to see how that legislation makes its way here in this last week of the legislative session. I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk to you about an incident that happened a couple weeks ago out in the TRIC area. Luckily, it didn't go down the way that the scanner first had reported it, but you had a situation out there last week that could have been potentially catastrophic for your deputies out there. Can you share us a little bit about what happened out there at TRIC?
Well, that's one of our highest areas of activity, Sam, so you have to be a little more clear as far as what incident that you're referring to.
I'm sorry, I should have been more clear. Yeah, so there was a report, I listened to the scanner, there was a report of an intoxicated individual who had barricaded himself in his truck, and he was armed, and it was reported as an armed standoff. And I was under the impression that deputies were, you've got the Lone Ranger out there at night, a single deputy who was basically facing a potential armed person inside his truck who was despondent, drunk, or whatever, and backup basically had to be scrambled here from Story County.
Okay, that clarifies things a little bit. But in just for sake of clarity, it was on the north end of the county. It was not in the industrial center. It was actually up Lago Mesino Canyon, up above the Lockwood area. There's a couple of businesses that are back up in the canyon, and it was up near those businesses. So, in short, what it was is, yeah, we have a guy who's up there. He's suffering some type of distress, and I haven't seen all the particulars on it. I think there may have been some type of a substance involved, but I haven't seen any of the official reports yet on it. Definitely was in a distressed state and was threatening to harm himself. Now, normally, and this has become common practice all across the country, if you are there and you are threatening to harm nobody but yourself, and there is not an immediate threat to anybody else in the free world, most of the time we're not going to take a whole lot of action because there's too many people out there who want to do what is called suicide by cop. You know, you do something stupid, get the police attention, and then, you know, create a situation where they kill you versus you taking your own life. So that is, as litigious as we've become, you know, a lot of times, you know, it's like, okay, you're not hurting anybody but yourself. We're going to wait till you calm down and we'll come back later, and then we'll stand off at a safe distance and just let nature run its course. In this circumstance, there were some other factors involved, so we couldn't take a standoffish approach. You know, we had to actually actively engage the individual. Because of where he was at, we couldn't use less than lethal means like a beanbag round or a taser or something like that. And so, yes, got a deputy that responds. Fortunately, I did have some other people available. They did have to respond from the Virginia City area. And then, of course, our neighbors, Washoe County, Sparks PD, they were there to assist us also because of the other circumstances involved. We didn't know to what magnitude that this was going to escalate. In the end, we talked to the gentleman for several hours, and law enforcement just pulled back, basically leaving one individual there because the guy, you know, we were able to satisfy our concerns that there was no threat to anybody else, and we kind of started to disengage a little bit, and the guy saw that he wasn't getting the attention anymore, so he decided that it was time to end the whole thing, and he gave himself up, and he was taken into custody without any incident, no harm to anybody. He was taken in for some mental health treatment, and you know, hopefully he's on the path to you know, get whatever is going on in his life rectified. But it was an incident, lasted about 4 hours, and it took quite a few resources. Both it was beyond the resources that we had available with our existing staffing, but thanks to the help of our neighboring agencies, we were able to bring that to a successful conclusion, and nobody was harmed during the whole ordeal.
Well, good. Yeah, I was operating on some misinformation, or at least a lack of information, when I brought that up to you just a moment ago. But it's clear that, you know, that in order to maintain an appropriate level of response out there in the north end of the county, that we're going to have to either, you know, rely on our neighbors or look at what kind of staffing we can get out there to, you know, provide the level of presence and protection that they pretty much, you know, require out there. I noticed, you know, in the Storyteller Online, we produce a account every week of the incidents that occur here that you release to the media. And just, you know, put in the locations of where you're doing your job. And, you know, if you combine Lockwood and the TRIC area, they represent probably 2/3 of the action that happens in Story County. So clearly there's a real need out there to have some coverage. And based upon what I see is, and folks who have shared with me their thoughts, that there's, you know, it's kind of threadbare out there. Is that
unfortunately, it's not just on the north end of the county. Those staffing levels are the same on both ends of the county. You know, with the approval of next year's fiscal budget, we did get to increase by one deputy in the patrol division. So I'll be able to field two deputies on both sides of the county. So that'll be two on the north and two on the south for about 18 hours a day. Still leaves a period of time where we're still down to single coverage, and then if somebody's sick or on vacation or something like that, then we may be down to single coverage. So that's a countywide issue. It's not just on the north end, but yes, with the ongoing development in the industrial center, you know, we're seeing more and more issues out there. Still pretty low level for the most part, mostly traffic related issues. But that, you know, every time you get more people together, there's a greater potential for problems. And you know, I think the last time I went through the statistics, you know, you've got that area of the industrial center, or that beat that we call it, is probably our second highest generator, if not the highest. It's running head in head with Virginia City, which is, you know, we get over a million visitors a year in Virginia City, at least according to the unofficial numbers that I've heard. You know, but it's that area in the industrial center is now, you know, in a rivalry with Virginia City as far as the amount of resources that it takes. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, you know, the development out there with the change in dynamics now, and I think I touched on this in our last interview, the development of hotels out there with food and potentially alcohol, maybe gaming, I don't know what all they have in place, but it is going to put people basically in a residential type of a situation, at least short term, which changes the whole dynamics when you have people who go to work and then they go home, so to speak, even if it is to a hotel, and they're staying there, drinking, eating, you know, that then the potential for problems goes up exponentially. And, you know, our communities down there along the river, they're very good communities, very quiet for the most part. You know, and more of our resources are going to be going out to the industrial center. But, you know, we've got the whole county to contend with. And, you know, Virginia City, the Highlands, Mark Twain area, all of those have their issues too. And we have those same staffing levels. And, you know, it's like when we talked about the cameras a little bit ago, and like we've talked about in the past when it comes to staffing. This is trying to balance the resources that I need to efficiently and effectively provide service to the residents of the county versus what is it going to cost. I've never advocated for tons of deputies. We don't need tons of deputies at the present time, but we do need some minimal levels to make sure that we're effectively providing that service and doing what we can to give some semblance of safety and backup to the deputies that are out there serving our communities. So, you know, my magic number, if you want to call it that, is if I had 20 deputies, that would be 10 deputies assigned to each end of the county. You know, we're still a few bodies short of that, but we're working there, getting there. And, you know, with the model of how we're doing things and the efficiency that we're doing things right now, even with those 10 deputies assigned to each end of the county like that, we're still lower than we were we're lower numbers of staffing than we were pre-economic collapse in 2008-2009.
Well, it is clear that the budget is providing you with an extra body, and of course we discussed in past interviews that Tesla is providing a couple, you know, the funds for a couple of deputies as well as funds for fire equipment. So, you know, within the context of adequate, you know, funding and the type of coverage that we need in the county, you know, clearly the job is being done. You look at the number of arrests, the amount of violence that we have, you know, the number of DUIs that are, you know, drunk drivers that are apprehended. I think that, you know, your department or your office is certainly doing the kind of job that we need to have done. We had mentioned last time we spoke that there was an open container of marijuana bill sort of wandering through the legislature. I was thinking about that after we had spoken, and, you know, because it's cut and dried with alcohol with respect to testing, how quickly you can determine whether a person is legally intoxicated or not, and there's, you know, serious ambiguity with respect to you know, marijuana, the idea and the notion of saying, look, you know, if you have that weed, you know, close at hand in the car, we want to prosecute you with an open container violation, as opposed to, as a lawyer once told me once, you know, hey, if the six pack is in the bag in the back seat, it's still groceries. So, do you have an update on that law, whether it's passed, and you know, can you, I guess, talk a little bit again about how, what kind of a sticky situation that presents one of your deputies in the field?
Well, as far as the legislature goes, I mean, they're down to their final week of session, so who knows what they're going to shake out with that, if anything, as far as an open container type clause goes. The last I've heard, they're still wrestling with testing measurements. That's something that is being wrestled with all across the country, not just here in Nevada, because with the both the medicinal and the recreational gaining ground all across the country, you know, there's going to have to be some serious reviews as far as testing and what it is we're testing for and where that level of impairment lies, and how we're going to show that. As far as the open container, you're absolutely right, and that's a good analogy, and that's what we're looking at. We would look at that, if the legislature doesn't do something, we would look at that on a local basis, you know, in a county ordinance, which is what I brought up at the county commission meeting last, is that, you know, we should maybe look at pursuing something like that in the absence of the legislature doing something. As far as that six-pack of beer that's in the sack in the back seat, yes, that's groceries. And that would be the same with, you go down to your local dispensary and you buy a bag or a box or a vial or however they're packaging, you know, marijuana, whether it's edibles or the plant matter or whatever, you know, those are going to come in a sealed container of some type. And as long as they're in the grocery bag in the back seat and the seal's not broken, you know, there's not a problem. But just like that six-pack beer, you know, the day after the party, and you left a two-thirds full beer on the floorboard of the car, and it hasn't tipped over yet, and the police stop you, you're going to get popped for an open container. And the whole idea behind that is just as a deterrent. You know, the law has said that you can have it, you can smoke it, it's fine, not a problem. You can't operate your vehicle while you're under the influence of it. So. Same kind of a thought process, same kind of a mentality. As long as the seal's not broken, it's fine. It's groceries. If the seal is broken, better not be in the passenger compartment, just like the container of alcohol. Lock it up in the trunk, lock it in a box, do whatever. It's just where it's not easy access, because I think we actually joked around about this a little bit, either during or post-interview last, is, you know, you're driving down the street and you see the bottle of whiskey sitting next to you, and it's already been tapped, and you think, ah, you know, a little swig isn't going to hurt me right now, and so you take a swig just to take the edge off. Well, same principle as, you know, you've got a baggie of weed sitting there, or you've got some magical brownies or something, you know, it's like, let me just take the edge off a little bit, you know, and it's the same kind of thing. It's just a deterrent, basically a reminder that you can't do this while you're driving, because now you're putting lives at risk when you're under the influence. Just as an aside to that, I just heard this morning, and you know, depending depending on what your feelings are about the whole driving under the influence thing. I don't know if you saw or not, Utah just dropped their alcohol level for impairment to 0.05 from a 0.08. So now they become the first state. NHTSA, other experts in the field have been recommending dropping the alcohol level to a 0.05 for some time now. Utah's the first one that did it, so it'll be interesting to see if any of the other states follow suit. I know Nevada was slow to do it, to drop from a 0.10 to a 0.08, but ultimately that happened. We'll see if Big Brother federal government starts trying to mandate it through restricting highway funds and everything. But again, taking it back to the marijuana issue, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what they come up with as far as this testing and levels of impairment, where that per se level is, you know, to determine that that level where you cannot safely operate a vehicle. So I kind of rambled a little bit, but I hope that at least addressed your concern and maybe gave you a few more insights.
I fall actually to the side of even being more conservative than most of my principled conservative friends. I'm of the opinion that the driving while impaired is the greatest safety to the public that exists today. It's not Al Qaeda. It's not people shooting each other with guns. It's people running into each other while they're drunk or stoned. And it's my opinion, my personal opinion, that rather than spending a night in jail, which is mandatory, you can't bail out or anything, I would suggest that if you spent a year in jail on your first, when you get pulled out of the car, you get cuffed, you don't get to Pasco, you spend a year in the pokey, the amount of deaths that are attributed to drunk driving and driving while stoned will plummet to nearly zero, but that's just me. Sheriff, it's been great talking to you today. Is there anything you'd like to close with, you'd like to share with the public before we wrap it up?
Just we've got a lot of things coming up this weekend. We've got the Reno Tahoe Odyssey Run that's coming through, so there'll be lots of people out running up and down the road. There'll be some people driving around in their cars involved in that event who aren't necessarily the nicest or the brightest people. So I would ask people use caution when they're out there and they see those runners or they see those vehicles stopping in the middle of the road suddenly, and try to be a little bit patient. And then just something near and dear to my heart, since I ride a motorcycle, this is also the spring fling for street vibrations, so we're liable to see an influx of motorcycles this weekend. And while I'm not participating in the spring fling, I am planning on being out there on my motorcycle this weekend, so watch out for motorcycles, because they are hard to see and they have every legal right to be on the road. So just ask everybody, be careful, be cautious, be safe, and have a great weekend.
Sounds like fun. Yeah, there's nothing like being out in the free wind and in the motorcycle. I concur 100%. Thank you very much for your time. I look forward to talking with you shortly here in the near future, and that's a wrap.